A65. Number 18A.
Now, this afternoon, we take another subject. We take the law of interdependence. The law of interdependence would present what? Well, what the term says, it is interdependence of the various levels. We have seen that the levels of science are actually only aspects of the one, that they are not on top of each other, so to say, but they are various aspects of the one science, and therefore they cannot be truly separated. But for the sake of understanding being, we make that distinction, that analysis, to separate these various aspects. But whenever one makes an analysis, one also should do the very counterpart, a synthesis, to put everything together again. But naturally then, when we have analyzed the situation and put it together, we put it together in a more understanding way. The whole thing then makes more sense. So, if we consider the word, well, the word is one word, therefore we cannot easily say, well, there is a special word in divine science, and then another word in absolute Christian science, another word in Christian science. It is always the same word. And if we want to bring out that they are interconnected and reflect each other, then we use that method of showing the interdependence of these levels. Now, there is very little literature actually on the very law of interdependence. There is a lot illustration of it, namely in John Dolly's verbatim reports, 1949, of the Oxford Summer School. He took there the four Gospels and showed those four Gospels first in their order, namely as the word order, Matthew, Mark as the Christ order, then Luke in the Christianity order, and then John in the science order. But he also at the same time introduced there what we today call law of interdependence. He himself didn't call it that way, but he showed it, and that's the main thing, not the naming of it. He showed that all those four Gospels were written from the standpoint of absolute Christian science. Therefore, he would show, say, Matthew, which was presenting the Word, that Matthew was written from the standpoint of life, truth, and love in the Word, and that the impact of life, truth, and love would bring out in Matthew the Word order, so that the life of Jesus in Matthew is shown to develop according to the word order, first of mind. You know how he showed there that whole beginning of Matthew that had all to do with the genealogy of Jesus coming right from Abraham up to various generations, up to Joseph, and then showing the birth of Jesus. Then the story goes on bringing forth spirit, because then Matthew shows the three baptisms. Then he shows soul, namely the temptations in the wilderness. See, where he had to prove his identity against animal magnetism. Then Matthew shows as principle the Sermon on the Mount, the teaching, the breaking up of the principle into its teaching, and showed there the Sermon on the Mount as a consistent system of teaching. Then when he had shown that, Matthew goes on and shows the life sense of that teaching, and he brings in then one healing after the other, all with a great authority of Jesus, with a great command that Jesus had, and shows one healing after the other. So he shows really the life sense of it. Then Matthew goes on and shows then the truth sense of Jesus' mission. It's a long section in which he shows that Jesus was the master over the world, and that the whole world actually was one calculus of ideas helping Jesus to fulfill his mission. Then at the end, naturally, we have love as the fulfillment of his mission, the crucifixion, resurrection, and the time after the resurrection. So can you see, Matthew was in one way showing the simple word order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, but intertwined in that order is constantly the impact of the word in absolute Christian science, namely of life, truth, and love. So that actually the story, as I have just related it, is not the full story, but the full story is seen when we begin to see that first period of mind was actually generated through the power of life and then truth and love, so that life, truth, and love brought forth the generation of Jesus. Then with the baptism, again, the same thing. The baptism are symbolizing the purity of spirit, the submersion into spirit, but it's all shown that submersion into spirit, the baptism of spirit, is not something that Jesus wanted to do, but that he was impelled to do, namely from that higher level of life, truth, and love, that life, truth, and love impelled those three baptisms. And so he goes on right through the story, and it's really the height of John Dowley's teaching in those verbatim reports, 1949. And in those he showed these laws of interdependence. Now, we can ask ourselves, how does that law present itself if we go right through the vertical of the word, namely start out with divine science as the word, then come to absolute Christian science as the word, and then to Christian science as the word. And so linking up all three into one consistent flow. And then we will ask ourselves, what is the practical implication of that law? How can we deal with it? How can we practice with that law? And what is involved in it? So we can start out with divine science as the one life. If we start out as the word in divine science as seeing that there is only one being, one life, that life we have been able to characterize as eternal life, the everlasting life, that life which is without beginning and end. We have caught that whole tonality of that one life, which says there is no other life, but that all is life, and that life demonstrates life. But when we are conscious and thinking along these lines, there is certainly something flaring up in our consciousness which says, yes, that's wonderful, but. And always the buts are very interesting and are very indicative, because they always give us the sense something is missing. Something has not been covered with a statement. There is another aspect to it that has to be taken into consideration. And so the but that comes up is usually that word in absolute Christian science which says, yes, But is that one life, that eternal life, just always life? Or is there not a newness of life going on? Is it actually everything already at the point of isness? Or that, is it not so that always something new comes to our consciousness and is being revealed and is being shown forth and comes to light? And that naturally is then answered through the law which we had this morning, through the law of the impelling force of life, that says, yes, there is a constant urge in that one life, constant urge that says that one life can infinitely individualize itself. So when we have the infinite individualization, we come right down to the level of absolute Christian Science and say, yes, that one life can individualize itself in infinite individualized lives. How does it bring it about? And there we have, well, that one life is actually at the same time the word in absolute Christian Science, namely life, truth and love. So, in our consciousness we can constantly stay with that sense that we say, yes, if I want to demonstrate newness of life, if I want to see that constantly something new is going on, that constantly a new revelation can go on, that there is no end to individuality and to the newness of life and to new ideas and to new revelation, then I have jolly well to see that I have to draw from that infinite reservoir of the one life, which says, I'm a well of life. I don't keep just the whole reservoir just for myself. I really bring it up and let it flow outward, and that sense of the impulsion of life, the drive of life, the urge of life, the impending sense of life, the spontaneity of life, is really then absolute Christian Science. So it's no use, can you see it, really to start with absolute Christian Science and say, well, I would like to have new revelation, that there should be newness of life, and start out just with life, truth and love, because then you would go again up and say, up to the level of divine science, say, but from where does life take its impulsion? And you would say, well, it takes its impulsion because all the life there is already here. It's the fullness of life as the one life is already a fact and it's there, and therefore, because there is that infinitude of life, life, truth and love can draw from there and impel the infinite individuality of life. Yes? Can you see how thought flows from one category to the next category and always feels, either if I go upward or downward, there is always a demand for a complementary level, so as to have a whole sense of the Word of God here. Yeah, but really that law of interdependence becomes really very near to our consciousness when we go further down the level and begin to see the interrelationship and interaction of the law of life, truth and love, which is the Word, with the Word in Christian Science, which is what? Which is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. So at that point we should find, as John Dolly showed us, that already the writers of the Gospel have seen it, or even, as I indicated sometimes this morning, I think, that even the writers of the very first record of creation already knew about it. You know that first record of creation was written by the prophets in the in the exile, in the Babylonic exile, around about 550 BC or so, they already knew something about this law of interdependence. Because how are the days of creation written? Again, in a broad outline, we may first see the days of creation from the level of Christian Science, which says, well, the text says, and God made this and this, and this was the first day, and then he made this and this, and this was the second day, and then the third day. So we can see it is written in a sequence of mind to love. But when Chandoli began to think more about those 7 days of creation, he suddenly could see that this is a limited sense of the days of creation. That actually in every day of the days of creation, there goes on a law with 3 points, namely, in each day of creation there was a command, let there be. And God said, let there be light, let there be a firmament. It was always let there be as an impulsion of life. Then God would always do what he wanted to do, and God made it. So it became factual. And third, always, that it was said, and God looked at it and saw that it was good. Therefore, it had a sense of completion, of fulfillment, of perfection, a sense of love. So each day is therefore compelled by life, truth, and love. Showing there that life, truth, and love compels the first day of creation. Life, truth, and love is again the same law that compels then the second day of creation. That life, truth, and love compels the third, and then the fourth, and then the fifth, and then the sixth, and then the seventh day of creation. And somehow, this satisfies one question that one would always have when one studies only the days of creation, only as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that one would say, but why did mind bring forth light? What authority has mind to bring forth light? What authority is there for spirit to separate the waters above and the waters beneath? From where do these seven synonymous terms get the impelling power? And therefore, at that very moment, one begins to see that there is something behind the activity of mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth, and love. And that which is behind the 7 synonymous terms are actually the higher level, namely absolute Christian Science, namely life, truth, and love. So that it's actually only from the standpoint of life, truth, and love that mind manifests itself. It's only actually from the standpoint of life, truth, and love that spirit actually does separate between good and evil. It is actually only on account that there is life, truth, and love, the Trinity of God, of life, truth, and love, that soul does actually identify everything rightly. And so on, this principle and life, truth, and love. Can you feel how combining the level of, or the word order in Christian Science with the word triad in absolute Christian Science, that gives us a higher sense of authority and power? For instance, you may feel when you are working about something, contemplating about something, and you feel, I really should this whole question in its proper light and see it really from the point of view of God. Well, what do we do at that very moment? We are really starting on the level of Christian Science, where we want to see the truth about an error or the truth about the situation. And actually then what we do is that we replace the arguments of error and put at its place the synonymous term. Are you with me? Simple, huh? So that instead of seeing that there is a lot of mortal mind going on and a lot of human thinking going on, a lot of human opinions going on, etc., we say, well, is that reality? And we say, no, that's not reality of being. The reality of being is that the nature of being is mind, the divine mind. And so we replace mortal mind and human opinion with the divine mind. And perhaps, as you are contemplating that and say, oh, yes, that's quite fine, that's wonderful. I don't have to rely on mortal mind and the talking of mortal mind, the opinions of mortal mind, what people think and what people believe and so on. I just go to the infinitude of the divine mind, what mind knows about the situation. Actually, only that what mind says is actually spoken. What people say is actually not spoken. We really must see that if God hasn't said anything, nothing has been said. And so we fill our consciousness with a very helping and saving and resurrecting way that we find a new foothold, so to say, in the divine mind. And as you go and do that, perhaps you very often have felt, is that enough? Has that really power? Because you begin to think, yes, it's only what mind knows that is real. What mind does is real. Mind, mind, mind. And you were wondering, is there any authority behind mind? Is really mind the very beginning of everything? Is mind really the core of everything? Or isn't there something bigger than mind that makes mind manifest itself? Can mind out of itself manifest itself? Because you remember now that we said mind, spirit, soul are only introduced in order really to offset the false nature, the nature of mortal mind, matter, and sense testimony, that they show, so to say, that mind, spirit, soul only show the true nature of something. But there must be something that brings that nature into operation, that makes that nature to operate in spite of its opposite. And as one thinks about it, one really is pushed to the higher sense and say, well, behind mind, behind the nature, is actually the person of God, is actually the divine subject, the divine God ego, the divine person, and that divine person is actually life, truth, and love. So thought then rises quite gently and naturally to the point where one begins to feel, oh, actually, that is not enough that I see that mind is the only mind, that mind is the true mind, that mortal mind is no mind, that only what mind says is being said, what mortal mind says is not being said, there's no power, no action, no channel, no power, no law, nothing of that sort. And one feels still a bit stale, because one feels, but that mind must be put into operation. And therefore one seeks for a higher authority even behind mind. And that higher authority is the person of God. Life, truth, and love. So that one begins to realize, actually one should see, that it is the impelling power of life that brings mind into manifestation. That it is truth. Life, truth, and love. That it is truth the factuality that brings that manifestation to a true manifestation, or that it is love in the law of life, truth and love, that says to that mind, and I manifest that mind to the point where it's a wholeness of mind, the perfection of mind, the complete sense of mind is being manifested. Yes? And in this way you build up a higher authority. I think the best way I can say it. You build up a higher authority and something else. What did you say was life, truth and love this morning? We said it was the true practitioner. That consciousness which really can give a treatment. It's a true practitioner. Therefore, as long as we usually stay on the level of Christian Science and just say, well, mind is that which takes care of mortal mind, we say, oh, that's fine, yes, mind is the reality, that takes care of mortal mind. And so, and then one feels, but in order that it does take care of it, I think I have to be constantly aware of mind. I have to think about mind. See? Then you feel, you are the practitioner. You have to be aware of mind, and only if we are aware of mind, then really mind is active. And actually this is not true. Mind doesn't act because we think of mind. That's metaphysics. That's the power of positive thinking. That's not science. Therefore, instead of the we thinking about mind and we realizing mind, we can go to the level of absolute Christian Science and see there is a person that is constantly thinking about mind, when we put thinking in quotation marks, namely life, truth and love. Life, truth and love is constantly aware that mind manifests itself. And you put again the treatment right back into life, truth and love.